RadioInfluence.com.
Champion, the Crusher!
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man's behind the glass, keeping us on track. Hey, we're your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, or as the man said, smart-ass remarks, get to us. We love them all. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and if you are on the Facebook, you can go to our page there. It's called Crush Performance as well. Today, really good show. I'm actually really looking forward to this, and it's pretty timely coming off the NFL Combine. We're going to talk about testing in sport. Can it predict future performance inside of sport, and what are the tests that are the most useful? Well, again, coming off the NFL Combine, I don't think there is a more intense, more comprehensive job interview on the planet. If you know of one, let us know. If you've been through one, certainly let us know. But these guys are broken down, torn apart, and looked at from the inside out. And it was a fantastic event this year. We'll talk about that for sure. Later in the show, I'm really excited about this, everybody. If you have a chance to stick around, I think this is going to be well worth your time. We're going to get a look behind the scenes at a couple of very, very powerful performance programs in the NFL. We're going to kind of get behind the curtains of the Seattle Seahawks and the Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to talk with Eagles safety and special teams captain Chris Maragos coming up. Chris was drafted as was signed as an undrafted free agent in 2010 by the 49ers, and he worked his way into what has been a very, very commendable NFL career. We're going to talk to Chris about his adventure. We're going to talk about the cultures he came through. He's with Seattle during that Super Bowl. And again, Super Bowl this year. The interesting thing about this year, and he was a big part of this team's success, he blew his knee out in game 6 and missed most of the season. So we're going to talk to him about that. And we're going to try to get a look at one of the top performers in the game. We're also going to ask Chris what the combine means to the NFL. So I'm really looking forward to that interview. And then later in the show, I want to lobby Connor for a new Olympic sport. I'm not going to spill the beans right now, but you know, coming off the Olympics, I really like what's going on. I totally enjoyed this Winter Olympics once again, but I have an idea for what I think might be a real cool sport that could be good for the Olympic movement. I'll lay that out later in the show, and we'll get to your texts, your emails, and I want to talk some athlete development, of course, if we have time later in the show. So let's get to it. Connor, how are you doing, my good man, first off?
I'm good, Crush.
Knowing what we know about head injuries, how they happen, the process of recovery, related to football specifically, because we're going to talk about the combine today. Do you think going to flag football, which is a big, big conversation right now in the developmental levels, would be a good move?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you take away the trauma from the head injuries that you collect through, you know, growing up. But I would wonder about, I guess, just the tackling, because it is kind of an art, and it's something that if you don't learn at a young age, you know, you just wonder, are you going to just start throwing your helmet around there and using it as a weapon because you've never really developed the skill and the art of tackling? So it's kind of a tough one for me. I think, you know, it'd be great. And if I had kids, I might be a little hesitant to put them out there and tackle football at a young age just for the health reasons. But long term, you just wonder, would it really be that positive for the game of football?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a real, I don't want to say it's a slippery slope, but there's really two strong sides to this story. We have NFL players saying they won't let their kids play based on what we know. But we also have NFL players saying that absolutely their kids are going to play. We see major changes in sports. And Connor, you're an NFL aficionado. And I think nobody's been more progressive when it comes to head injuries than the NFL for a number of reasons. Legally, that's one of them for sure. But despite the reasons why they're they're doing it. They've done some really, really good work. And I think they're also, in terms of changing the rules to increase player safety, they're one of the most progressive leagues out there.
Yeah, I mean, and they're trying, too. You see the fines coming in, the suspensions. The suspensions don't seem to hang around because as soon as a player appeals it, it gets reduced or taken away. So that I think they could be a little bit more stingy on. But yeah, they're trying to get it out of the game. And for me, I think it's all financial. I don't think they really are too concerned about the player's well-being. I think they just don't want to get sued again.
Yeah.
And that's what it is for me. I don't think they're too concerned. As long as they're, you know, making money, they're okay with it. But now the lawsuits are coming, so they have to adapt.
Yeah, no question about it. And then I guess maybe we have to go away from the pro game to those players who play the game from, you know, a little tyke football, you know, the pony leagues and, you know, the developmental leagues or around the country and around North America. And a lot of those kids will never play college ball, and they'll certainly never play professional ball, but they're still at risk. So, Connor, in hockey, we've banned body checking up to the bantam age, and it's turned out to be a pretty good move. I think we're going to be researching that data here in the spring. But there was a big pushback when they started talking about getting rid of body checking at the up to the peewee levels in hockey. Some of the data has come out shows that, you know, getting away from the hitting has allowed players to focus on the skills a little bit more. It doesn't mean we don't coach body contact. It's just not allowed in the game. We also see things like the U.S. soccer banning heading, for crying out loud, to protect the heads. So, you know, we just have all this information about head injuries, the long term impact of repetitive trauma to the brain. I wonder if there might be a place for flag football to a certain level. We still teach tackling. It's just not allowed in the game. The only question I would have for the people who are pushing that argument, what do you do on the line where you have your offensive and defensive players? Because let's face it, that's where the impacts are happening.
Yeah, in the movie Concussion, there was the Pittsburgh Steelers center Hall of Fame player who, that's how it happened, right? It was just those offensive lines just colliding, throwing their faces into the defensive linemen, and that's where it really starts, and it's just nonstop. We've talked about it many times on the show. That's really where you start to have the issues with CTE, right?
Yeah, right. And it appears that way most certainly. And what a lot of people don't realize is every time those guys collide, they're generating forces that are similar to what we see in car accidents, for crying out loud. And that's hundreds and hundreds of plays over the year, thousands and thousands of plays over a career. And one of the reasons that they've eliminated contact or reduced contact practices almost at every level of the game. So we're progressive. So again, everybody, two Marmot Lift passes up for grabs, a $50 deluxe burger bar gift certificate. Knowing what we know about head injuries related to football, do you think it's a good idea to initiate flag football in the developmental levels of the game? Let us know, and we're going to revisit that in the third segment. So, Connor, I know you've been on cloud nine. Let's get down to business here. You've been on cloud nine. We're just coming off the NFL combines. I'm going to make an educated guess that you were glued to it and following it like glue.
Yeah, absolutely. I a little different, you know, working on the night show, I was able to stay at home and watch the combine on the weekdays, and now being here for the Jason Greger Show, which I'm a part of now, I had to watch it on the small TV here. A little harder to focus, but absolutely. I love the combine. For me, I don't put too much stock into it, but I think for certain players, you have to show up and put up decent results just for the fact that scouts will see, hey, this guy's he's taking it serious. He knew what he had to come and do, and he achieved it.
Yeah. Do you agree that it might be one of the most comprehensive, I mean, if we just call it, it is a job interview. It's one of the most comprehensive evaluations of talent in the sporting industry. You might make an argument for the NHL entry draft, but it's not at the same level as the NFL combine.
Yeah, I mean, and the NFL's hyped it up. They've done such a great job of making it must-see TV, of course, capped off with Rich Eisen running the 40-yard dash for the Children's Hospital Foundation. But yeah, you're right. And it's something you just have to watch. They always find the really intriguing storylines. And for me this year, Shaquem Griffin, he was the guy to watch. He had his left hand amputated at the age of 4. He went out there and did 20 reps in the bench press, ran a 4.38 40-yard dash. They do a great job of just hyping up that event. And I don't know if it's, you know, how much scouts look into it. You're not wearing equipment. I think they just don't want you to go out there and bomb it. But for the fan, the consumer, we're all about it now.
Yeah, I personally like it. I like getting a glimpse at the next generation of potential great young players. But here's the question that we have now, I guess, when it comes to the combine. Is it really effective in predicting performance in the NFL. We know these guys already have a body of work in college football and before that probably in their high school programs, and those are tracked very, very carefully, or at least revisited once a player starts to show some talent and promise to play at the NFL level. But the combine typically hasn't produced a lot of great NFL players. Now, there have been, don't get me wrong, but I think if you look at the number of guys that go through the combine, we don't see a lot of correlation to success in the NFL. Do you agree with that? I mean, we have numbers out there. They're up and down. They're skewed all over. I don't think we have anything accurate. So I'm going to say that more as a general comment than anything.
I'm reminded of Matt Jones. And I don't know if you know him. He played quarterback in college. And then he entered the NFL draft and everyone was scouting him as a wide receiver. 6'6", 240, ran a 4.3740 yard dash. Everyone's thinking, this guy's a freak. This is a guy who, geez, he might have been a late round pick, vaulted all the way to the first round. Didn't translate to NFL success. You got to base it, I think, a little bit on what they do, but it's got to be film. There's guys that will slip through the cracks because they ran a slow 40-yard dash. How many times are you running 40 yards in an NFL game straight line?
You're not.
With a cold stop. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen that often. So I think we put too much into it a little bit. And yeah, I mean, I think at sometimes some scouts, general managers put too much stock into it.
Yeah. I think so. I think the teams, Connor, use it more as sort of maybe a final analysis. Everybody who's invited there has a pretty good reputation in the game. These kids are projecting. These players are projecting for sure. And I think when a team gets their time with these athletes, they're using it more to make a final decision of where he might fit into their organization and how, if they do wind up with that particular player, how they might help him translate the talent and athletic ability he has into the game. Now, part of this is also trying to get a player that fits into the system that you're running with your team, which has so many variables that it's almost, we don't have time in an hour to even talk about it. But finding the right player for your system, finding out if that player has potential to play in that team system and how you can help him translate that raw athletic ability into on-field performance at the highest level, that's the trick of the trade.
Yeah, and you could almost argue that the interviews are more important than the on-field
I agree.
Things, right? You're going to have your film from college that the scouts are going to be looking and monitoring, but you have to go and meet with all these teams, and I think that's where you find out how much does he love the game, what's the priority, what type of person is he? They throw a lot of weird questions in there, but they all serve a purpose.
Yeah, I agree. So, again, you talked about some of the things you liked coming out of the combine. Shaquem was one of them. Any other real impressive performances that you saw? I saw a bunch. I mean, almost too many to talk about, but there were a couple real standouts.
Saquon Barkley, running back from Penn State. And, he really didn't have too much to gain. He's projected as a top five pick without a doubt, maybe even higher. And he went out there and still kind of blew our minds with his 40-yard dash time. He was phenomenal. The quarterbacks, interesting that Sam Darnold from USC didn't throw. I'm always kind of intrigued by that. But another guy, he's kind of projected to be the top quarterback. He's not really gaining anything by throwing. Might as well wait to the pro day to do it. I wonder if there's questions about his compete level because, right. You know, we kind of think, man, you want a guy who goes out there and wants to prove he's better than everybody. But I think the quarterback and Saquon Barkley were, for me, guys that I was kind of tracking there.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and you bring up an interesting point about, you know, the sleepers, right? And I think, you know, if you look at the NFL as a whole, one of the greatest evaluators of hidden talent is Bill Belichick. If you look at the people and the players and the personnel he's brought into that organization, it isn't always the flashy front runners that he's looking for. He is often looking for the gold behind the scenes. He is a prospector of talent, man. I really like his approach. I think more teams would do much better if they sort of started taking that approach to, you know, looking at maybe hidden potential rather than what's right in your face.
Yeah, and I like what he does just based, you know, you can go there and you can find a pass rushing stud, a Myles Garrett from Texas who went first overall last year, Texas A&M. But he finds guys that, you know, maybe they're not going to give you the full game, but he rotates his defensive line, someone who can give you 30 great plays. And he's so smart and just bring these guys in that fit the system. They can do their job. Geez, he might not be a 6'4" wide receiver, but he runs a great intermediate route, never drops a ball, and boom, Danny Amendola. There you go. He's going to fit the system.
Yeah.
I like how he finds guys that just fit for the Patriots.
Yeah, I do too. There's a lot to learn watching these teams evaluate these young talent, talented players. And I think at every single level, if we watch what goes on at the highest level, we can really sort of make some adaptations or at least some adjustments in how we operate, even if you're working with young kids in the developmental part of the game. All right, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, listen, I'm really looking forward to this next conversation. We're going to get a look inside of two of the NFL's top performance cultures. And we continue to ask our question of the day. Knowing what we know about head injuries related to football, should we go to flag football at the developmental levels? All that and much more coming up after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kerschel, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Jeff Kerschel here, the Con Man, is behind the glass. We're your weekly source for performance information. Again, if you want to get in touch with us, our website is crushperformance.com. Get our blogs, our newsletter. You can get our new book, The Performance Plan. It's officially out. It's out there, and we've got some great responses for that. So thanks for everybody who's been having a look at the new book. You can also get us your questions, comments, and smart remarks there as well on Twitter at Jeff Crush and Facebook Crush Performance. Today, we're talking football. Had a great conversation about the combine and the question of the day. Some great, heated, and passionate responses. The question today, though, I'd really like to get your response. There's a lot of talk right now based on what we know about head injuries in relationship to football. There is a lot of talk about initiating and eliminating contact at the lower levels of the game, at the developmental levels of the game. And going to flag football. What do you think? Good move, bad move, and maybe why? We've got really, really good arguments on both sides so far, so keep those coming in. Listen, we always look to the pros to figure out what we want to do. We try to get a glimpse inside of the top performing environments to see what we can learn and bring back to our own lives, our own organizations, our own teams, and even our own athletes. And anytime you can get a glimpse into that part or that height of the game, it's very, very special. And right now, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We are joined by Chris Maragos, safety and special teams captain for the Philadelphia Eagles. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been really looking forward to talking to you. Of course, I've been following the Eagles all year long, rightfully so. And in week six was really, really tough to watch. We'll talk about that in a minute, but you went down with a knee injury. Coming off the combine, there's lots to talk about in football, Chris. But maybe just to sort of set the tone here for our listeners and maybe to sort of preface this conversation, let's talk about how you broke into the league, Chris. And we'll talk about your journey since then. But you were signed in 2010 by the 49ers as an undrafted free agent, which is a real unique way into the league. But you made it happen. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, some guys get drafted. They get, you know, big opportunities, and they're these big prospects, and, you know, teams have high hopes for them. But, you know, for me, that just wasn't the case for me. But for me, it didn't really matter whether I was drafted high or not. You know, I went undrafted, and I knew that as long as I got my opportunity, you know, I was willing to take advantage of it and to do whatever I could to, you know, have success. And so, you know, it's been a phenomenal ride for me. I'm entering my ninth year, and you know, just a testament to just continuing to try to persevere no matter what obstacles, you know, come to you. And you know, always try to just make sure that you're putting yourself in a position to have success.
Yeah, and that's a great message, Chris. You know, if we talk about what it really takes to be successful at that level, I think a lot of people would be surprised what you guys do behind the scenes, dedication, the work, the hours, for sure. Before you were signed,
in 2010. What was your attitude? Let's say back, let's go back to your high school years, Chris. Did you have your sights on the NFL, or when was that dream? When did that dream turn into a tangible reality for you as a young developing player?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, you always think that you want to play at the next level. You know, how realistic that is, you know, obviously, you know, it's slim chances, but you know, that's something you work at. You know, when I was in high school, you know, you always had the mindset, the dedication to, you know, put your best foot forward and to try to go on and play in college, and then, you know, obviously have success in college, and hopefully the NFL is a realistic possibility and opportunity for you. So, you know, for me, I just always tried to just take it one day at a time and just, you know, always try to just, you know, make sure that I was, you know, committed to the process and not really worried about the success or the results of, you know, what I was trying to achieve.
Oh, I like it. We're talking with Chris Merrigos, safety and special teams captain for the Philadelphia Eagles. Chris, that is a great message to send. You know, I think a lot of athletes, especially at the developmental level, and Chris, we might also send this message out to parents and some coaches as well. I think sometimes we get too focused on results, don't you think? And sometimes we just need to step back, go through the process, and the results will take care of themselves. Do you think that's fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the problem is everybody always is looking too far ahead, you know, and you're not doing the things that you should be doing to get to the next level or to do what's at the here and now. And you know, when you start looking at that, you start losing track of the little things. And I'm a big believer that small hinges swing big doors. So, you know, a little hinge on a big old door, you know, controls the whole door. So for me, it's about doing the littlest of things that make the biggest of difference and really have, you know, great results at the end of it.
Oh, that is great stuff right there. Small hinges swing big doors. Chris, absolutely love that. Hey, let me ask you this. You know, if we were to sort of look back at your career and, you know, breaking into the league, you know, we talk about developing athletes and being focused on the process. You know, one thing we kind of talk about our athletes to kind of help them stay in tune with where they're going and stay in on focus, because it's sometimes a long, hard road. We talk to them about pointing their compass. Hey, just get an idea looking forward where you want to go. And I like what you said about sometimes we focus too far in advance. What we tell our athletes, Chris, see if this resonates with you at all. We say, hey, point your compass. Have a dream for sure. And let's point that compass. And then let's just leave that out there. Leave it out there. And let's get back to the business at hand here. And let's slowly work in that direction. Does that resonate with a guy who's sort of been through that process already?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, so often there's so many things that are always competing for your time or your attention or, you know, the things that, you know, might distract you from where you want to go. I think you're 100% right. You always have to, you know, refocus your compass and make sure that you're going in the right direction. And there's a lot of things that are going to compete for your attention and try to distract you from, you know, the ultimate goal and the things you're trying to achieve. But you have to make sure that you're always committed to, you know, centering yourself and having, you know, a good idea of the things that you are good at, to continue that as an athlete, to continue to use those to your strengths, but then also have a sober judgment about yourself to, you know, make sure that you're taking care of the little things, you know, that you're maybe not that good at, that can help you propel you to that next level in your game. So those are all really important things.
Yeah, they are. And Chris, you said something really, really important there. Having a sober judgment of yourself. It's so, so critical. And I think a lot of athletes have a tough time self-evaluating. I could tell you this, you know, sort of following your career, we have a couple of very close mutual friends. You know, every step along the way, the league, whether it's the coaches, the recruiters, the GMs, have talked about your work ethic and character. And I think sometimes, you know, we're coming off fresh off the combine where we get to see speed, power, and agility. Sometimes I think, you know, we might underestimate developing those character traits at the developmental levels. How important was that for you breaking into the league?
Yeah, you know, totally. Because, you know, anybody can line up and run, or anybody can line up and, you know, just go out there and just, you know, think you can go through a couple drills. But the reality of it is that this game isn't based on drills or, you know, a running competition or anything like that. You know, it's built upon, you know, guys who have instincts and are willing to understand how to break down film or throughout the game to figure out what your opponent's doing or little tendencies that they might have, so that in the fourth quarter, after you get a really good idea of what he's trying to do against you all game, you can finally make that play to beat him, you know, and to steal the game for your team or whatever it might be. So, you know, the scouting combine is really important to showcase, you know, your raw skills, but there's so much more that goes into it. And I think really a lot of the interviews, you know, that the teams are going to do with these athletes, you know, make a really big difference, you know, and can help.
Yeah, for sure. We're talking with Chris Marigo, safety and special teams captain with the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Hey, Chris, let's go back to the start of your career. Cracking into the league with the 49ers in 2010, what a huge and monumental occasion that was for you as an individual athlete. Let's talk about that process. What happened and how did that go down? When did they get to see you? Maybe just walk us through that little period of time in your career.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, I didn't get invited to the combines, you know, all that kind of stuff. I went to my pro day, but I had an opportunity to, you know, continue to showcase my abilities, you know, on those types of levels. And, you know, for me, you know, the 49ers really fell in love with just kind of that grit and the determination that I had. They saw that on film, and they really wanted that to be a part of their team. Mike Singletary was the head coach at that time, and they wanted those types of players. And, you know, they said, hey, we want you to be our guy, you know, and we're not going to bring in any more safeties, you know, this year as undrafted guys, and we want you to come compete for a spot. So, you know, for me, that's all I asked for, and that really kind of helped establish myself in the NFL and kind of gave me that foot in the door in the league.
Yeah, and so let's talk about this. You had some time with the 49ers, which was fantastic. You got your feet wet. You got a chance to understand the league. Then you moved over to the Seahawks in 2011 to 2013. And I'm telling you what, I really have been looking forward to ask you this question because we've watched the Seahawks struggle, and then we watched them come together, and then we watched that incredible 2013 season where you guys won the Super Bowl. Hey, Chris, talk to us a bit about the culture inside of this organization and Pete Carroll and the coaches. This is something special, I think, inside of that organization. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, you know, Pete Carroll, he's got a lot of energy. You know, he's, you know, always kind of got, you know, that that optimistic point of view, you know. And I tell you what, he is a great football mind. I mean, he really understands the game. He's a great talent evaluator, those types of things. And you know, he's a guy that really, really sets the blueprint for the team, and we had a lot of success there when I was with Seattle. And man, we were able to win a Super Bowl, and obviously, they put together some of the most historic, you know, top defenses, you know, in NFL history.
Yep.
And, you know, have been able to be, you know, one of those top teams, you know, for a long, long time. So, you know, it's really cool to kind of see what they've been able to do and sustain it. And, you know, it's interesting kind of to see what's going to be, you know, ahead for them, you know, coming up here.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I want to take one step further now. You went to the Eagles in 2014. And again, we don't have to put you on. I'm not meaning to put you on the spot here, but you went into another incredible performance culture, I'll say, because boy, oh boy, the Eagles have been fun to watch. And last year was incredible, Chris.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. You know, I mean, the greatest part, and I think just even the average fan, you know, who really doesn't know much about football, or the ones who do know a lot of football, could probably, both of them would say that this team really had a great group of guys in the locker room, guys who cared about each other, guys who loved each other. And, you know, that bond really was what kind of propelled us forward and really gave us, you know, what we needed as a team to go deep in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. And, you know, you see, you know, how, you know, a group of guys who have great spirit that, you know, love to play the game and that love playing with each other, you know, you can see what can be done through that. And, you know, we were able to accomplish that, and now we're world champions because of it.
Oh, so much to learn from successful organizations. We're talking with Chris Marigo, safety and special teams captain with the Philadelphia Eagles. Hey, Chris, where does that come from? Where does it come from? Why doesn't this happen in other organizations, do you think? Is it one of those magical elixirs that comes together, or is this a planned thing? This group of guys who actually care and go to battle together, that can't be a mistake, Chris.
Yeah, no, you know, it's definitely planned. You know, it starts with the ownership. You know, the he sets the tone. You know, Jeffrey Lurie sets the tone with, you know, what we're doing as an organization, who he's hiring as a head coach, as a GM. You know, obviously those are really important hires that he has direct influence on to do. And so, you know, to really see, you know, a guy like him, you know, set the stage kind of per se for the organization, and allow you know, our you know, GM and head coach, you know, to do the thing is really important. And then, you know, it trickles down from our GM and head coach that they're collaborating and finding guys that fit the right culture that, you know, and I don't envy them because they have to make a lot of hard decisions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see that, you know, they would sometimes probably be enamored by the guy who's a, you know, got a height, weight, speed guy, or a guy with a tremendous ability, but he just doesn't fit well with the team. And ultimately it ends up, you know, taking you two steps back rather than two steps forward. You know, and, you know, I think what Howie Roseman's been able to do as a GM is take those guys where he says, hey, I'm not going to get enamored by this guy and maybe some athletic ability or what he's done in the past. I'm going to find that guy who fits our team and fits our scheme and, you know, put them in a position to have success like that. So you know, it's just and then of course, it goes down to the players to be willing to put the work in. So, you know, to me, to win a world championship, especially in the NFL, because there's so many players on every single play, you know, it's so special, and there's so many pieces that, you know, have to go right, you know, all throughout an organization to accomplish something so great. So, you know, it's really, really cool to look at when you take a step back and see what you can accomplish with that.
Yeah, no question about it, Chris. Hey, let's go back to week six. Maybe one of the toughest, I guess, maybe weeks of your football career, but also maybe perhaps one of the greatest times in your life as well. I know there's some great news that shadowed the dark cloud. You went down with a knee injury in week six of last year, and as you got the news about the knee, there was other great news about your wife going into labor. So what a mixed bag of emotions that was. Maybe talk about that period, because we know, and I've been through it with a lot of guys in a number of different sports. Chris, those injuries are hard to deal with.
Yeah, you know, they are. They're long, they're slow, they're painful recovery process, you know, with these types of injuries. But the reality of it is that, you know, you understand that, you know, in the difficult times in your career, that's where I think you can grow the most. And, you know, for me, instead of looking at it as something just trying to get through it, okay, how can I embrace this? You know, how can I get better at whatever it is that I am as a player, as a person? And how can I move forward, you know, to go out and put my best foot forward and to do what we need to do? And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, for us, we just look at it and we're like, man, you know, I mean, you know, for us, it's like, you know, geez, you know, as an athlete, you just want to play and you want to perform and you want to do those things. But it's okay, how can I take these, you know, life lessons or these difficult situations and turn them out for good things? And that's what you have to do through it.
Yeah, Chris, I'm telling you, man, this is, I really appreciate what you just said there. You know, we tell all of our athletes, whether they're developing athletes or whether they're longtime professionals in any sport, an injury can be an invaluable opportunity if you approach it the right way. Chris, hey, what a great, great perspective that you have there, and I'm really looking forward to you getting back. Hey, one more thing I want to talk to you about before we get to the combine is being named captain. What an honor and a privilege. And I think, you know, our listeners can understand why that happened. But maybe talk us through that major event, because boy, oh boy, what a special thing that is to be a one of the team captains in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's, you know, as a player, as an athlete, as a competitor, you know, you try to, you know, do whatever you can to earn the respect of those around you. And, you know, to be named a captain from your teammates, it's so special, and it's something that, you know, is very unique and probably something that I cherish more than the Super Bowl rings or any accomplishment that I can do as a player is being named a captain. That's probably the thing I'll look back on most fondly in my career. And, you know, it's, you know, you just try to be well every day, you know, and to take the guys and draw out the good things in them that can keep them, you know, going and keep getting better. And I'm thankful every day because of it.
Yeah, great stuff. Chris, last question. Let's get back to the combine. We're fresh off the combine, as we talked about earlier. You know, we get to get a glimpse of the next generation of great young potential players. And I say potential for a good reason, because the combine doesn't necessarily mean success in the game. We've seen that time and time again. But I think it's also a great time for maybe kids with potential and young players with potential to showcase themselves and create, maybe it's an avenue of opportunity for players. Maybe talk to us as a veteran player and captain of a team now, what that combine means for the sport and maybe for young players who are looking to go that route or get the opportunity, I should say, maybe even to get go that route.
Yeah, you know, it's big. You know, obviously, you know, everybody knows the big names in college football, but there's always those guys who are sleepers where maybe they don't really know exactly what they can do because there's not enough film, or they had a position change, or they were stuck behind a really good player for a long time in their college career. You know, so they were really able to, you know, move forward and do some great things like that. So, you know, for me, you know, the way that I look at the combine is an opportunity for guys to showcase who they really are. And the reality of it is you can't bake it at the combine. You are what you are. Your 40 is what your 40 is. Your weight is what your weight is. Your strength is what your strength is. You can't hide from that. You know, it's about the work that you put in for it and really the type of player that you are. So, you know, it just solves a lot of question marks for teams. And it really gives guys who might be a little bit more on the back burner the opportunity, you know, to showcase themselves and propel them forward to have a great career in the NFL. And definitely something that I know a lot of guys benefit from, and I know the league does as well, too.
Yeah, I think we saw from this last combine a lot of great surprises and some great storylines as well. Hey, Chris, listen, I won't keep you any longer. I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your time today and your great, great insights. We're looking forward to the next season. We're looking forward to training camp and to see you back in action again.
That's awesome. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good one. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there you go, everybody. Fantastic conversation. Get the podcast of that. You can go to our website, crushperformance.com, and share that conversation. Just fantastic stuff in there. Hey, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get to our text question of the day. Lots of really, really good texts coming in. Knowing what we know about head injuries related to football right now, should we go to flag football at the developmental level? There's a big push there. We'll get to your texts and a lot more right after this on Crush Performance.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Crush Performance. We are talking football combine today. Just came off a great conversation with Chris Maragos, safety and special teams captain for the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Connor, great conversation right there and some really, really good insights into, you know, what it takes to play at that level. And I really like the emphasis on character, a real big theme in the conversation with Chris. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, and he's a guy, like, he's just kind of the poster boy. The combine, it means a lot, but if you don't get invited, there's other routes you can take, and the character is something that stands out for him. Yeah. I remember a few years ago when he had free agency, and special teams players don't usually get a lot of attention, but there was a lot of teams bidding for his services, so really just says a lot about the player and the man that he is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How about that? Getting the news about your in week six of the Super Bowl season, of course, you know, team was doing quite well. Getting the news that your season is done due to a knee injury, and then within the same 30 minutes, getting the news that your wife is going into labor with a new baby. Bittersweet moment in his career right there. But again, you know, if you talk to anybody in that organization, even though he wasn't on the field, he was a huge part of that success. So a lot to learn there. Again, the podcast, you can get that podcast, re-listen to it, share it, go to crushperformance.com. So Connor, we've got a heated exchange going on here in the Twitterverse and also on our text line. Again, 10-12-60, standard text rates do apply. Our question of the day, we're going to be giving away two Marmot lift passes if you're listening live today to somebody out of our text pool. Also a $50 Deluxe Burger gift certificate. Knowing what we know about head injuries related to football, should we go to flag football at the developmental levels? Now, listen, there's been a lot of talk about this across the board, and it's hard to ignore this conversation, Connor, based on what we know, but there's a real two-sided battle going on here. Yes or no, there's no in-between, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to have their opinions for sure. We talked about it during the break. Just, you look at rugby tackling, and it's an art that they use that you don't see the big headshots, you're not lowering the shoulder. And I get it's a different game, and football, so it happens so fast, and some of those things are just, they're going to happen. But I just wonder, you know, we've heard people talk about hypothetically taking the face mask off the helmet, and so you can't use it as a weapon, you're not just throwing it in there. And I wonder down the road if that would be something. Just, you know, we've seen rugby, they don't wear any equipment, the tackling's great, and they teach it from a young age. So I wonder if, you know, taking away some of the protective gear would maybe help it in the long term. It's weird to think that way, but I just wonder about that.
Yeah, not so weird, I don't think. I think we've had this conversation numerous times on the show. We've certainly read about it, and some of the people inside of the NFL for sure and developmental football have talked about this very point you bring up, Connor, about the fact that the equipment is getting so good that it's almost allowing players to get into dangerous situations. And not only that, for players that maybe don't understand the game or want to use it in a certain way, it can become a weapon. So one of the texts coming in from Doug, no tackle. No, absolutely no when it comes to flag football. Tackle is part of the game. Should research better helmets? Well, the research going into helmets has been tremendous over the last decade, and it's only getting better. But it doesn't matter what we do. There is no way a helmet is going to prevent a concussion or a brain injury. It's just not going to happen. Could it reduce the risk? Most certainly. And that's what I think we're seeing. But Connor, I think you bring up a really good point. And we've seen, you know, some of the rugby personnel experts come in and starting to work in the American Football Leagues to teach proper tackling techniques. So that could be a way to go. Do we do it at the younger levels? Why not?
I think part of football, I mean, it's a violent game. There's no ways to get around it. Those things are still going to happen no matter what you do. There's still going to be the headshot. I know a lot of receivers, you catch the ball and you try to get down. And sometimes if you're a safety coming over the middle, there's nothing you can really do. It's going to happen. I think just trying to reduce it. And, you know, it has to start at the developmental ages.
Yeah, so here's one from Nick. Hey, Crush, hate the idea of flag football. Comes down to choice of the individual playing the game. Head injuries come with the territory, Nick. Okay, and Nick, I do agree with you there, but knowing what we know now, like, we've already made some really good changes to the game, especially when it comes to reducing the amount of contacts in practice. And that has been a tremendous shift in the amount of exposure our athletes are getting to head contacts. And here's the other thing about that, Connor. I don't think we're seeing the results of that yet at the higher levels. This generation has got to come through, and we're probably 3 or 4 years away from that generation getting to the highest level of the game. Now, have the changes that we've made at the developmental levels in restricting contacts in practice, is that enough to really change outcomes at the higher level? Very, very possible. Here's another one. I think flag football is a very appropriate and preventative response to the prevalence of head injuries plaguing the sport. Good one. Flag football. No flag football. Savvy from Spruce Grove. Here's another one. No. Tackle's part of the game. That one we've done already. Here's a good one. Here's a really good one. Hi, I played hockey in Europe. They don't hit in hockey. You don't need to hit in football. Let the skilled players excel. Here's another one.
You do need to tackle in football, though.
What's that?
You do need to tackle in football.
You do need to tackle in football. There's no question about it. That's part of the game. Part of the game. If boxing was taken out of schools a long time ago due to concussions and brain injuries, I don't see why they still keep tackling in football. It's a great conversation that we'll have to carry on in the future. Have to thank Chris, and I want to thank you guys for listening. Talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Jim Fannin Show Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
How many things in your life have you decided, I can't do this? This is too big of a challenge. How many athletes, I'll never make the NFL. I can't believe this coach is not going to let me start. Then you become a victim of your circumstance, you know, or your condition. Then you become a judge. You really let go of your imagination and your creativity of what's possible. But one of the secrets of a cross-country runner, when you've hit the wall, you're not in the zone, you're the opposite, and you can feel your body starting to shut down, you just say, I can make it to that tree. And all you care about is that oak tree. And maybe it's 200 yards, 300 yards away. I'm going to make it to that tree. And that's all you focus on. Then you get to the tree and you go, I can make it to the hill. We all have that 4-minute mile. You know, everybody says, you can't do it. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.